सहनावतु सहनावमनतु सहवीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै। ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः। नमः श्रीशङ्करानन्द गुरुपादाम्बुजन्मने सविलासमहामोह ग्राहकर्मणे।
Welcome back. Before we continue, it'd be nice to review some of the really important introductory points. We started now chapter 3 of Panchadashi, Panchakosha Viveka. And we distinguished it from chapter 2. We said chapter 2 was an inquiry out into the world, Panchabhutas, and discovering the mithyatva of everything in the world, leading us to recognize the non-dual Brahman, because of which mithya jagat exists. That was all chapter 2, that outward-turned inquiry. Chapter 3 reverses that direction of inquiry 180 degrees. It's all an inward-turned inquiry, leading us to, let me return if it's okay, to that infamous bullseye. And I actually used some awfully harsh terms around it when I said it's incorrect. What's incorrect is if you draw a little dot inside and say Brahma. That's the part that's incorrect. Representing the five koshas in this concentric manner, and it's not in and of itself incorrect. In my opinion, it's misleading and not as helpful as it might be. So let's explore this a little bit further and see what might be a little more helpful. In fact, I discussed it in the last class. The word kosha literally means covering or sheath, which is obviously the reason that this diagram has come about. But we did talk about this, I'm pretty sure, in the introduction, and that is, how can Atma be covered? That which is all-pervasive, like space. What are you going to do to cover space? So to call these koshas as coverings for Atma is a little misleading, and yes, that's what the word means. Kosha does indeed mean sheath or covering. But a better understanding, in fact, I ask you to write it down, my definition, not uniquely mine, but the definition I prefer to use, is that each of these five koshas is a locus for identification. That's a crucial definition. If you miss out on that and think of these koshas as literally covering, you'll be confused. How can a kosha be a locus of identification? I thought of a really stupid example. Suppose when you go to work, suppose it's a very formal workplace, and you have to wear very formal work clothes. So you put on those formal work clothes and you become identified with the worker. So that's an outer covering or sheath, but it becomes a locus for your identification. Or when a policeman or fireman puts on their uniform, a locus for identification. So instead of thinking of kosha as a covering for Atma, which is a problem, better to think about it as a locus of identification. And finally, with regard to this diagram, here's another insight. I hinted at this in the last class. And it's how many of you, are you good at thinking spatially? Many people are good at it, many people are not good at it. Suppose what you're looking at is actually the end of a long tube. A long tube that extends miles into the wall. And that's what you're looking at. So it's a whole different perspective on our bullseye. Suppose we take that long tube and turn it on its end. In which case, you've got a long tube
end. And then we could say that the first part of the tube is the Annamaya Kosha, which is to say in this range you are identified primarily with the physical body, and the next part of the tube represents the Pranamaya Kosha, where you're identified with prana. Are you tired? Are you strong? Are you weak? The next part, mind. Are you agitated? Are you relaxed? What are you seeing and perceiving? Manomaya Kosha. The next part, Jnanamaya Kosha, intellect. And the final part, it's too long, is Anandamaya Kosha. We're going to talk about all these in detail. But turning this bullseye on its side, so to speak, gives us something, I think, very helpful. And that is a process where you move from one to the other to the other, going, if this is the entry to the tube, you're going deeper and deeper and deeper into that tube. And I think that more accurately describes the process we call Panchakosha Viveka. Viveka, discriminative understanding. So the whole point of this is to recognize the Annamaya Kosha as being anatma. That's Viveka means that. Just to say, oh, this is my Annamaya Kosha, and I love it very much. How is that Vedanta? So Vedanta is, this is the Annamaya Kosha, and it's not me. This is a Pranamaya Kosha. It's not Atma. Manomaya Kosha, not Atma. Vijnanamaya Kosha, anatma. Anandamaya Kosha, anatma. That's the Viveka. And that's what our chapter is about. Not just Panchakosha. Panchakosha Viveka. That's the chapter tonight, right? Okay, enough introduction. In a prior class, we had seen the Annamaya Kosha and the Pranamaya Kosha. Remembering that the Annamaya Kosha, made of food, literally, refers to that which is sthula, physical, tangible, and the Pranamaya Kosha refers to a non-tangible, non-physical reality, the life force that animates the body. This much we talked about, and we get the right verse. Enough introduction, we'll continue. Yes. Now we continue with the Manomaya Kosha. Ahantam mamatam dehe.
Ahantam mamatam dehe.
Grahadau chakarotiyaha.
Grahadau chakarotiyaha.
Kamadyavasthaya pranto.
Kamadyavasthaya pranto.
Nasavatma manomayaha.
Nasavatma manomayaha.
Manomayaha. Kosha we're talking about. Look up at the top, second line, yaha karoti, that which makes what? Two things. The Manomaya Kosha has two things it makes, two results. One is ahantam. Aham is our pronoun I. Ahanta, I-ness. When you add ta or twum onto a word, you make this so-called abstract noun, like when we add ness onto a word in English. So aham ta or aham twa means I-ness. And then mamata. Mamata, literally, mama is a pronoun, my. Mamata, literally, my-ness. When I learned some Hindi, I was so amused to know that in North India, mamata has such a nice meaning. Unfortunately, in Sanskrit, its meaning is not nice at all. Mine. That's the Sanskrit meaning. of mamata. In fact, that meaning of affection is absent in the teachings of Vedanta, completely absent. Okay. So this manomaya kosha creates, it creates ahamta I-ness dehe in the body. It creates I-ness in the body, means identification with the body. And it creates mamatam, my-ness. It creates my-ness with regard to griha adi, with regard to your house, etc. So it's my house, my car, my children, whatever it is for you. So first thing that Vidyaranya Swami is teaching about, what does this manomaya kosha do in terms of our experience? And he says it creates a sense of I-ness and my-ness. I-ness referring to me, my body, etc., and my-ness referring to all my possessions. Now, this is not a very conventional definition of manomaya kosha. Those of you who have studied some other Vedantic texts, like Tattva Bodha, etc., a very common definition for manomaya kosha or manas. Manas and manomaya kosha are the same, right? Manas, mind. Mind is the manomaya kosha. Very often you'll see a definition like sankalpa vikalpatmaka manas. The mind is that which is wavering. It's sometimes like this, it's sometimes like that. And then they distinguish it from buddhi. They say buddhi is nishchayatmika, the mind. The buddhi is that which is deterministic. So the mind is very like flip-floppy. There must be a better word for that. Mind is indeterminate in its function, and the buddhi is very determinate in its function. What a different definition than what he gives here. Then we get other definitions. Many of you have heard this fourfold definition of antakarana, when we divide it as manas and buddhi and chitta, memory, and ahankara, where ahankara is a separate fourth element. Here he's putting ahankara with manas, but oftentimes ahankara is held out separately as a fourth item in addition to three others. The take-home message of all of that is it's arbitrary. It's a matter of how you chop it up. It's a model, it's a mode of analysis. There is no one right approach. It's just a matter of your perspective. How do you divide it up? So don't get rigid in these definitions. Every author and text will use perhaps their own definition, trying to make a different point. And we'll see what is Vidyaranya Swami's point here in just a moment. Just to add to that, and I have my own definition, which is different from all of them, a definition I find very, very helpful. Because when I was a young student going through all of this, I didn't like some of the definitions. I don't like those traditional definitions, the sankalpa vikalpa business. And nishchayatmaka business doesn't work for me at all, and I've given it a lot of thought. So definition that I prefer, which is consistent, by the way, with the teachings of Vedanta, a definition I prefer to distinguish manas and buddhi, many of you have heard this from me, the portion of your mental activities that you do not control is manas. The portion of your mental activities that you intentionally control is buddhi. And you can see it, that has some relevance to these traditional definitions, but I think this is much clearer. Certain aspects of your mental activity you control. You control what you can choose to think about an elephant. You can choose not to think about an elephant. You have control to think about it, to not think about it. You chose to come here to class this evening. So these are examples of intentional activity that we would then allocate to buddhi, in contrast to manas. Manas refers to those mental activities you have no control over. Right now, your eyes are open and your head is facing me. Do you have any control over whether you see me or not? Now, you can choose to close your eyes. That's buddhi. With your buddhi, you can choose to close your eyes. But while your eyes are open and while you're looking at me, you cannot choose not to see me. So these perceptual activities are part of manas. Another great example of manas is emotions. Yeah. How many times have you been told you should control your emotions? Forget it! You have no control over your emotions. You have control over your buddhi, and through the buddhi you can exercise some control over your behavior, etc. But over your emotions you have no direct control. We better admit that, and allow me to make this point because it's so misunderstood. If you can control your emotions, most people start out thinking that. Because you've read it and heard it so many times, you have to control your emotions. Okay. If you can control your emotions, then please try this experiment. Some of you have heard me give this experiment before. For the next 5 seconds, be really angry. Start. Yeah, you're laughing. I mean, I ask you to be to be angry. Let's just get over it. You do not. You have indirect control over your emotions. Fine. You have no direct control over your emotions. So we would include emotions and emotions. Anyway, this is just to summarize the fact that there are different ways of categorizing these different aspects of the mind. There's a fourfold way, manas, buddhi, citta, ahankara. Here we're seeing a twofold way, manas and buddhi. Both of them are part of ahankara. Ahankara is going to be referred to in two more verses. Buddhi, in this text, buddhi plus manas equals ahankara in this text. Not always the case in this text. In other texts, manas plus buddhi plus citta plus ahankara equals antakarana. Did I say ahankara before? Sorry if I'm mixing my words. I meant antakarana. We'll see that word in a few minutes. So antakarana, literally the inner instrument, our general word for mind. We can take that antakarana and break it up in a fourfold manner, or we can break it up in a twofold manner, which is what we're doing in this verse. Okay, enough said. Now, as I commented before, our purpose is not to analyze the five koshas. Any more than our goal in chapter 2 was not to analyze the five elements. Chapter 2 is not a text on chemistry, right? That's elements. It was for the sake of negating the reality of the elements to discover Brahman. In the same way, even though this chapter is entitled Panchakosha Viveka, our goal is not the five koshas. In fact, our goal is to negate each of the five koshas. So how? Now we have to negate this manomaya kosha. So the first half says that the manomaya kosha is that which creates I-ness and my-ness. Coming back to my definition, do you have delivered control over my-ness and I-ness? If you have a house or a car, having minus in that house or car is pretty natural, right? Mm-hmm. If I tell you, or how many spiritual texts tell you, give up I-ness and minus. Give up the I-ness in your body. Give up the minus in your possessions and your children and your parents. Can you do that? You just decide, okay, I'll give it up. Why? Belongs to the manas, mind, and to use my definition, manas or mind are those aspects of your mental activities you have no direct control over. So they don't go away on their own. That being the case,
having identified manas as the source of I-ness and minus, now the real purpose of this verse is to negate the manomaya kosha. Go back down to the final line. This manomaya koshaha na asau atma. Break the words apart. Asau, that manomaya kosha, that manomaya kosha na atma is not atma. Why? Because, and the third line gives us the reason. Because tamadi avasthaya brantaha. The word branta is interesting. Many of you know it as being confused or deluded, brantaha. But it actually comes from a root meaning which is brum, to wander. So brantaha can mean confused. Usually it means confused. But here, it's helpful to actually take a root meaning. Brantaha is usually confused. Here, brantaha is one who is wandering. Mind wanders. Does your mind ever wander? In class? Sure it does. That's okay. So, the mind, manomaya kosha, na atma, is not atma. Why? Brantaha, because it's wandering. How is it wandering? It is wandering kamadi avasthaya. It is wandering because of these avasthas, conditions of the mind, such as kama, desire, etc. So your mind wanders from one avastha to another. Here avastha doesn't mean waking, dream, and sleep. It's used in a very general sense. One condition to another. Sometimes your mind is full of desire. Sometimes your mind is full of anger. Sometimes your mind is full of joy. Sometimes your mind is full of so many things, so many emotions, so many thoughts, so many mental conditions. Those mental conditions here are just called in general avastha. And avasthaya, because of all these different changing mental conditions, your mind is brantaha, confused, or a better meaning here is your mind is wandering from one condition to another condition to another condition. Your mind is changing. And the Sanskrit word for changing is vikari. This is the word the commentator uses. Your mind is subject to vikara, change. That which is subject to vikara, change, is vikari. What is the significance of this? Consciousness doesn't change. Atma doesn't change. In fact, how do you know that your mind changes from being happy to sad? And just to make the point here, it's a little subtle, you'll get it. Suppose, as your mind transitioned from being happy to sad, suppose you, the conscious being, also transitioned from being happy to sad. As your mind went from happy to sad, you, the observer of your mind, went from happy to sad. If that were so, would you recognize the change from happy to sad? In order to recognize the changing conditions of your mind, don't you have to be an unchanging observer? Unchanging observer is avikari. Atma is avikari. Atma is unchanging. Your mind is vikari, constantly changing. Brantaha is wandering from one avastha, from one condition to another. Because your mind is changing, na atma, it is not atma. On the other hand, atma is that unchanging consciousness. This, by the way, is one of the simplest definitions of atma, and it's especially helpful because it's very close to our experience. The Atma is, there are many ways of defining Atma, and no one definition is complete, but this is a very helpful definition. Atma is the unchanging consciousness
by which your changing mental activities are known. And in that definition, when I say Atma is the unchanging consciousness by which your mental activities are known, are your mental activities known to something other than you, or are they known to you? Known to you. And the important point is, you are that unchanging consciousness. The true you is that unchanging consciousness by which all the changing conditions of the mind are known. Okay. Having concluded our very brief analysis of Manomaya Kosha, we move on to the Vijnana Maya Kosha.
Add something here. Just we'll build this up a little bit, add some words up here to get some clarity. So we said that the Manomaya Kosha included Ahanta and Mamata. Let's include that. Now what we're going to see now is in the Vijnana Maya Kosha. We saw this back in verse 2. So the Vijnana Maya Kosha was called the Karta, the agent of action. And while I'm up here, I'll just finish the chart by saying that the Ananda Maya Kosha is going to be identified as being the Bodha. So this is Vidyaranya Swami's approach. And this is unique. I don't think I've seen exactly this presentation anywhere else.
It has a certain clarity to it.
Okay, we'll continue.
Lina suktau vapur bodhe.
Lina suktau vapur bodhe.
Yapnu yarana kagraga.
Yapnu yarana kagraga.
Chichayo peta dhir natma.
Chichayo peta dhir natma.
Vijnana maya shabda bhak.
Vijnana maya shabda bhak.
Last line, Vijnana Maya, which is the kosha we're talking about, Shabda Bhak, that which enjoys the name Vijnana Maya, that which is called Vijnana Maya. So the Vijnana Maya kosha, Shabda Bhak, that which is called the Vijnana Maya kosha, is what? Look at the second last line. It is Chit Chaya. Upeta dhihi. Dhihi means buddhi. Buddhi means intellect. So the Vijnana Maya Kosha is the buddhi, the intellect, which, and he adds an important adjective here, it is chit chaya upeta. It is upeta, endowed with the chaya. Here chaya doesn't mean shadow, it means reflection. The reflection of chit. Chit Chaya, reflected consciousness. Many of you were in last year's class. We talked at great length about reflected consciousness. Chitabhasa and Chit Chaya are synonyms. Chitabhasa, reflected consciousness. Chit Chaya, reflected consciousness. We had extensive discussions about that in our study of Chapter 7. We're not going to re-enter those discussions because that's not the purpose of this particular verse. A simple way of understanding it is this. Your physical body is made of physical stuff. Physical stuff is jada, inert, insentient. Your subtle body, which includes Pranamaya Kosha, Manomaya Kosha, and Vijnanamaya Kosha, your subtle body is made of subtle stuff. If physical stuff is jada, what can we say of subtle stuff? It's still jada. So your manas and buddhi are jada. Well, that explains a lot, doesn't it? Sorry. Well, they are jada, but here the adjective comes. Your buddhi, in Vidyaranya Swami's language, is endowed with reflected consciousness, which means your buddhi gains consciousness, gains sentiency. Sorry, wrong word. Your buddhi, even though it's made of stuff, subtle stuff, even though your buddhi is in and of itself inert, non-sentient, it gains sentiency due to its contact with consciousness. It picks up consciousness. Just like the moon emits no light, but the moon reflects the light of the sun. The moon becomes a shining object in the sky because of its proximity to the sun. In the same way, your buddhi gains sentiency, as it were, due to its proximity to consciousness. As the moon reflects sunlight, your buddhi reflects consciousness. That's what this expression means. Chaya upeta dhihi. Your consciousness, which is your buddhi, which is endowed with reflected consciousness, that is what? The Vijnana Maya Kosha. And what about that Vijnana Maya Kosha? It says here, in the end of the first line, Bodhe. Bodhe, when you are awake, your Vijnana Maya Kosha, Vyapnuyat, it pervades. It pervades, what do we have to jump around to get the words? It pervades your vapuhu, your body. When you are awake, bodhe, your vijnana maya kosha pervades your body. And he's very specific here. He says, anaka agraga. That naka is nail. Naka agra is the end of your nail. Ah, up to that point, up to the end of your nail, your consciousness, I'm sorry, Vijnana Maya Kosha pervades the body. That's what that ga affix, it goes. Your Vijnana Maya Kosha pervades your body, going throughout your body up to the tip of your nails. Now, this is not a common, this is rather unique to Vidyaranya Swami. This is rather unconventional way. What he is saying is your body, in very simple terms, your body, when you're awake, is pervaded by the Vijnana Maya Kosha. Now, what is the sense of it? Go back to his word from verse 2. Karta, agent. Who was it? I think French philosopher Descartes or someone like that, who talked about the ghost in the machine in describing a human being. Which is to say, inside your body is someone who's controlling it. Right? There is. Inside your body is someone who's controlling it. You remember that movie Wizard of Oz, that guy who's with all the levers and stuff behind the screen? So there's someone inside your body, pervading your body, controlling your body. And that's what Vidyaranya Swami means by this expression. Again, it's not a very typical way of explaining it, but it works. So he's making the point that Vijnana Maya Kosha is the source of the karta, the agent of action, the conscious, intentional, willful agent. You, the person sitting in your chair, you are a willful agent of action. You chose to come here to class. You're choosing to listen to this discussion. Some of you are choosing to take notes. If you don't choose, that's also fine. But you're choosing not to take notes. Good. the point is that the person sitting in your chair is a willful agent of action, karta. And that agent of action is the one who's in control of your physical body. It says pervading your body up to the tips of your nails. The one who's in control of your body, bodhe, when you're awake. On the other hand, suptao, when you are asleep, suptao, when you are asleep, what about that buddhi? Lina, it is resolved. You are in control of your body when you are awake. What about in supti? Can mean, here it can mean even dream state. In a dream, do you control your physical body? And in deep sleep, you do not control your physical body. So in dream and deep sleep, you have no control over your physical body, indicating the absence of the vijnanamaya kosha. Bodhe, when you're awake, the vijnanamaya kosha pervades your body, allowing you to control every aspect of your body. I think that anaka must have that sense. Every part of your body is under your control. But suptao, when you are asleep or dreaming, it is lina, it is resolved, you have no control. And that little expression, lina suptao, is giving us something that he hasn't... He hasn't managed to fit into this verse. He tries to pack a lot of stuff into each one of these little verses. He didn't manage to fit in the words na atma. They didn't fit. But it's our responsibility to pick them up from the prior verses and carry them forward. By the way, this is a very common principle in scriptural interpretation. Sometimes words from prior sentences or paragraphs or verses, you have to carry them forward. So na atma has to be carried into this verse. It's there. What am I talking about? And would it be good if I read the verse before I go on talking about this? It's there. Na atma, the end of the same, thank you. End of the second line. Why? I don't know why I didn't see that. It's right there. So you don't have to carry that forward. It's right there in front of you. Na atma. It is not atma. Why? And that's what that first two words tell you. Lina suptao. It goes away when you're not awake. We just said with reference to the first, with the manomaya kosha, that consciousness is the unchanging observer of the changing conditions of your mind. Well, to resolve in sleep to go away is certainly change. So, in sleep, you do not functionally control your body. Vijnanamaya kosha is resolved. Do you cease to exist in dream? You're very much there in dream. Do you have any control over your body in a dream? None. Vijnanamaya kosha is resolved during dream condition. By the way, going back to the definition I proposed, manomaya kosha is very much present in a dream. We defined it as the portion of your mind you have no control over. We have no control over what happens in our minds when we're dreaming. The intentional, deliberate part of our minds, called here vijnanamaya kosha or buddhi. These are synonyms. Vijnanamaya and buddhi are synonyms. So that buddhi is resolved in dream. So, since the buddhi or vijnanamaya kosha resolves in dream and deep sleep, since it comes and goes, therefore, na atma. Okay. He has one verse here to explain the term antahkarana. So we said there are so many ways of chopping and, what is it? Slice and dice. different ways of slicing and dicing, so we'll see how he slices and dices and the karana here. Kartritva karana tvabhyam.
Kartritva karana tvabhyam.
Vikriyetantarindriyam.
Vikriyetantarindriyam.
Vijnana manasi hantar.
Vijnana manasi hantar.
Bahishchaite parasparam.
Bahishchaite parasparam.
He uses a term in the second line, antar indriyam. Antar means antaha, inner, and indriya means organ or sense. Antarindriyam is actually a less common form of the word antakarana. Karana means indriya. Indriya means karana, organ of action, sense. So it's often said, you've heard this teaching, that you have five senses plus one. You have five senses, sight, hearing, taste, touch, smell, but you also have another indriya, another sense organ, which is inside. And that inner sense organ is called antakarana, here called antarindriya. I think exactly the same thing. And the word antakarana, when used in Vedanta, is a very general term for mind. So sometimes we can say that the antakarana is composed of these four parts, manas, chitta, ahankara, and buddhi. Or we can break it up in a twofold manner, as Vidyaranya Swami does here, manas and buddhi, that's what he says. So this antarindriya, the antakarana, the mind, just while we're talking about this, just to make it very clear, you can just say this is antakarana, is manomaya kosha and vijnana maya kosha together as a unit considered the antakarana, here called antarindriyam. And he says that this inner organ, vikriyeta, it transforms itself. It undergoes change, and the antarindriya, antakarana, can undergo change in what way? It can gain kartritva. Where is kartritva? Here. It can gain kartritva, or it can gain karanatva. Karana means the five senses. And the five senses, he hasn't explained, the five senses are connected to the mind. Here, he wants to say this so briefly that he leaves a lot of details out. Let me just offer a little analysis here. It's going to tie in here. So through the manas via the five senses, receives information from the world. From the world through the five senses to the mind, manas. He hasn't explained this, but this is explained in many Vedantic texts. It's just left out here. So how do we learn about the world? The world is perceived by our five senses, and that information is relayed to the mind, manas. Here again, my definition of manas, that which we have no control over. We have no control over sensation. We wish. If you had a headache, wouldn't it be nice to turn that off and not feel the headache? It would be really nice, but we have no control over senses. Then buddhi, or vijnana maya, via this, buddhi, including this karta, is the agent
and through being an agent that pervades the body, controlling the body, you then act on the world. Notice the different direction. Through the senses, we receive information from the world into our mind, and the buddhi goes in the other direction. So the karta, the sense of agency, is associated with the buddhi or vijnana, and it pervades the body. Pervades the body means controls the body. And since we control our body, then with our bodies we act upon the world. Notice the arrows go in opposite directions here. The manas being the receptor of the world, of information about the world, and buddhi being the agent, the karta, acting upon the world. With this in mind, we can make sense of this verse quite easily. So he says, this antarindriya, the ahankara, the antakarana, the mind in general, the kriyeta, it undergoes change. Undergoing change, it becomes kartratva, agent, it gains agentness right here. So the antakarana gains agentness, or it gains karanatva, senseness. It gains agentness, or it gains senseness, which means it transforms itself both into buddhi and manas. That's what we're showing here. That the antakarana is the source for that which we call vijnanamaya kosha and that which we call manomaya kosha. In his language, the antakarana transforms itself into kartratva, which is buddhi or vijnanamaya kosha, and it transforms itself into karanatva, the senses, which is relating to minds, manas. Kartratva represents buddhi, karanatva represents manas. So the antakaran transforms itself in this twofold way. And this twofold way, vijnana manasi, means the two of them, the vijnanamaya kosha and the manomaya kosha. Here he's using this interesting compound, vijnana manasi. The two of them are parasparam, mutually. One of them is antaha, turned within, and the other is bahihi, turned outside, ete. This is true of both of them. Ete, both of them, mutually, are turned one within, one without. Well, buddhi is turned within the body for the sake of controlling the body, and manas is turned via the senses out into the world. And that's what he says. So vijnana and manasi, vijnana gets connected to antar, within. The vijnana maya kosha is focused on controlling the body, and the manomaya kosha is focused on receiving information about the world, therefore it is bahihi. So he added this verse to explain that the word, common word, antakarana, and what he's saying is that the antakarana transforms itself both into manas and buddhi. And with that, we come to the end of his brief analysis on the vijnanamaya kosha. Now we come to the anandamaya kosha, which back in verse 2 he called the bhokta. Bhokta means enjoyer. I hope these words aren't confusing. Ahanta, inus, mamata, minus, karta, agent, bhokta, enjoyer. Okay. Kacharantar mukha vrittir. Ananda pratibimba bhav.
Ananda pratibimba bhav.
Punya bhoge bhoga shantau.
Punyabhoge bhogashantau.
Nitra rupena liyate.
Nitra rupena liyate.
So now, anandamaya kosha. Remember, we are negating each one of these as the locus for identification. So you are not your physical body, because your physical body is an object like the chair known to you, so therefore it's not that. Prana we dismissed also. What was his arguments? I don't want to go back and pick up his arguments. So in last week's class we negated the annamaya kosha and the pranamaya kosha. In today's class we've negated the manomaya kosha, because the mind goes on changing. Atma doesn't change. And in the same way, we just negated the vijnanamaya kosha, the buddhi, the intellect. The buddhi undergoes resolution in a dream. You don't resolve. In fact, you're still there aware of the dream. You're aware of the dream in the absence of the vijnanamaya kosha, in the absence of the buddhi. Thereby, we negate buddhi or vijnanamaya kosha, vijnatma. Now we come to the last of the five so-called koshas, the anandamaya kosha. And the ananda we refer to, this is tricky. The word, before we plunge into this, the word ananda is a really potentially misleading word in Vedanta. When you translate ananda as the experience of bliss, you get in some trouble. Mm-hmm. And the reason you get into some trouble is we often use the word ananda to refer to Atma. So if you say ananda is experiential bliss, then we have to say who is experiencing that bliss. But if ananda is the bliss, then who is the experiencer of the bliss? This is a problem when we say ananda is experiential bliss. Even though the word ananda on the surface, it means bliss, fine. But we have to deal with the subtlety of Vedanta, and that's what we're going to see right now. Why, then, if ananda is a word that can be misleading, then why use that word ananda for anandamaya kosha? It seems to make things more confusing. So to have anandamaya kosha makes perfect sense. Pranamaya kosha makes sense. Manomaya kosha, vijnanamaya, you know, you can envision them as coverings or different by the way, the plural of locus is?
Loci.
So these are loci of identification. That we're getting Latin words also. As if Sanskrit isn't enough of a nuisance. So why then would our traditional acharyas use a word which is potentially misleading, as in the case of anandamaya kosha? We'll see if this verse can explain it to us. So first he defines what is this anandamaya kosha. The word anandamaya is actually not used until the next verse, but that we're talking about that anandamaya kosha. And he defines it here. He says, anandamaya kosha is a vrittihi, first line. Vritti means a condition of your mind, an activity of your mind, or a condition of your mind. But a particular condition of your mind, he says, it is a particular condition of your mind when your mind is antarmukha. It is kachit, some kind of condition of your mind, kachit vritti. It is some kind of condition of your mind which is antarmukha, turned inwards. A condition of your mind which is turned inwards. The sense of this is our minds are usually engaged with worldly activities, or during a dream, you're engaged with dream activities. So what's being described here is a condition of your mind when it is not engaged with worldly activities, nor is it engaged with dream activities. Well, most of you have figured out worldly activities relates to jagrat avastha, waking state, waking condition, and dream activities refers obviously to svapna avastha, the sleep state. So we've negated both of those. The mind is not engaged in jagrat avastha, waking activities, nor is the mind engaged in svapna avastha, dream activities. What's left is a condition we know as sushupti, or deep sleep. So sushupti, deep sleep, is a condition where the mind is antarmukha. It is inward turned. Inward in the sense that it's not outward turned. If it's not outward turned, then it must be inward turned. That's what the first line suggests. Then the second line, ananda pratibimba bhak. The anandamaya kosha is bhak. It is endowed with pratibimba, the reflection. We saw the word chaya before. Here we got the word pratibimba. In this context, you mean the same thing, reflection. The reflection of what? Ananda. Ananda pratibimba, the reflection of ananda. We're talking about vritti, a condition of your mind which literally reflects ananda. Now, there's something a little odd. Maybe some of you picked up on this. Ananda, the word ananda here, refers to sat-chit ananda. Doesn't refer to an experience of bliss. We just got done with that. The word ananda refers to sat-chit ananda. So in deep sleep, your mind reflects ananda, which is sat-chit ananda. What is your mind reflecting right now? Satchitananda? And in a dream? Satchitananda? Your mind always reflects Satchit. There's nothing else for your mind. Your mind can only reflect consciousness. The moon can only reflect sunlight. There's nothing else for it to reflect. Your mind can only reflect consciousness. And it does so in all three states. Right now, your mind is reflecting Satchitananda Atma. In a dream, your mind is reflecting Satchitananda Atma. And in deep sleep, your mind reflects Satchitananda Atma. Then why is he saying here that this condition in deep sleep, when the mind is antarmukha, in that condition, your mind reflects ananda? Which is, by the way, he wants to establish why it's called anandamaya kosha. He's defining why it's called anandamaya kosha. In deep sleep, your mind reflects ananda. Now, as I said, the problem with this is your mind is reflecting ananda right now. Then what is the difference between your mind reflecting ananda right now and your mind in deep sleep, when it's antarmukha, reflecting, and that word antarmukha is a key. Right now, your mind is reflecting all kinds, your mind is just so busy and active. There's so much going on in your mind right now. Reflected ananda is present in your mind, along with everything else. In deep sleep, reflected ananda is present without anything else. That's the distinction. Right now, reflected ananda is 100% present in your mind, but it's impossible to recognize that reflected ananda in the presence of so many other mental activities. The unique condition in deep sleep is no other activities are taking place. the only thing reflected in your mind is that ananda and nothing else. The metaphor, I think we used this in last year's Panchadashi class, the traditional metaphor of the brahmana who went to a ceremony to see his son graduate, and all of the children are there chanting the Vedas, and the father is really disappointed because they're, all the boys are chanting, he can't make out his son's voice. All the boys are chanting simultaneously. He's unable to make out the voice of his son. If all the other boys were to shut up, he'd be able to hear his son's voice. So this is the metaphor that's used to describe our condition right now. There's so much going on in our mind. We can't recognize that reflected ananda. In deep sleep, it's the equivalent of all the other boys are quiet, and only that one boy is chanting. Father can hear his son's voice very distinctly. In deep sleep, all other activities in your mind have come to an end. The only thing present is mind, and Satchidananda Atma, reflected in that mind. And that's what's described here as Ananda Pratibimba Bhag. When the mind is antarmukha, when the mind is not engaged in any other activities, jagrat avastha activities or swapna avastha activities, not engaged in waking or dream state activities, then the mind is antarmukha, then that mind is ananda pratibhambhavak, that mind reflects ananda. When does that take place? Well, we said during deep sleep. Just a funny aside, sleep problems are very, very common. Many people. We all have occasional disturbances in our sleep. Some people have chronic disturbances in their sleep. So wouldn't you agree that deep, restful sleep is a blessing? In fact, in the tradition, it's considered to be the result of punya karma, which is what the second line, third line says. Punya bhoge, when you are reaping the fruits of your good karma, you get good deep sleep. They got it right. It's a blessing. So punya bhoge, while you are reaping the results of your punya karmas, your mind is antarmukha, and you enjoy, you have this ananda pratibimba, you have the experience of reflected consciousness and nothing else. That's what we call, let's finish that. We call it ananda. Before we jump ahead, let's come back to that one last time. So why do we call it ananda, if the word ananda is so misleading? How would you characterize the experience of deep sleep? You exist, sat. You are conscious, chit. We need one more word. How would you describe your deep sleep? And we say, I slept blissfully. We use that word all the time to describe that condition, that experience. On analysis, that condition of bliss is not the presence of something, it's the absence of everything else. And the greatest example of that is meditation. When you're meditating, you gradually make your mind antarmukha when it returns. You gradually withdraw your attention from worldly activities, then you withdraw your attention from sensations in your body. Ultimately, you withdraw your attention from any mental activities as a mental activity is fade away. Tell me, as you're meditating, as your mind becomes increasingly quiet. What a that is such a telling experience. As your mind becomes increasingly quiet in deep sleep, you will have the sense of going closer and closer to something of ultimate value. Like going through that tube I had drawn on the board. The quieter your mind becomes, the better you feel. Notice it's brought about through the absence of mental activities. Satchidananda is who you are. In deep sleep, almost everything else is gone, except for Satchidananda Atman. Did you notice I said almost everything else? There's one little thing present in deep sleep that conditions your experience, and it happens to be ignorance. In deep sleep, ignorance doesn't go away. Your mind goes away, mental activities go away, but ignorance doesn't go away. Which is why the Anandamaya Kosha in technical Vedantic texts is held to be identical with the Vidya. And on the surface it seems really unintuitive, but on analysis it's really meaningful. In deep sleep, what's left? In deep sleep, awareness of your physical body is gone, awareness of your pranamaya kosha is gone, manomaya kosha is gone, vijnanamaya kosha is gone. What is left in deep sleep? Satchidananda Atma plus avidya. And based on this, avidya describes the anandamaya kosha. Okay, now, let's finish this. So, punya bhoge, when you are... Can I finish now? Yes. Punya bhoge, when you are enjoying the fruits of your good karmas, you get that good, deep, restful sleep. On the other hand, bhoga shantao, when you exhaust your punya karma. They really were very fond of this karma theory. And they thought, when you go, here's their thinking. You go to sleep based on punya karma. How long will you sleep? Now, in those days, they didn't have alarm clocks. So there's no alarm clock to wake you up. So if it's a blissful condition, you think you just stay asleep. Who would willfully, without an alarm clock, who would willfully come out of that blissful deep sleep? But you do wake up. According to the doctrine of karma. Yes, you figured it out. You wake up because you've exhausted the punya karma because of which you had the deep sleep. You've used up that karma, sleep comes to an end, you wake up. So, bhoga shantao, when your punya karma is exhausted and you wake up, then nidra rupena liyate, then this ananda pratibimba, this experience of bliss in deep sleep, liyate, it dissolves, it goes away, nidra rupena, it belongs to the condition of deep sleep. When you wake up, it goes away. So in deep sleep, when there are no other activities of your mind, you enjoy that condition of deep sleep. And when you are identified, here's the last part. When, remember we said each of these koshas is a locus for identification. You can be identified with the ahanta, I-ness, and mamata, minus, due to identification with the manas, mind. You can be identified with being the karta, the agent of action. And in deep sleep, you are identified as being the experiencer. of deep sleep, bhokta. So to be identified as the experiencer of whatever is happening in your mind, or in this case, the absence of activities, that experience, identification with that anandamaya kosha is shown in this verse. In the next verse, it gets dismissed. Oh, let me just pick that up quickly at the end of our class. Kada chittatvato natma.
Kada chittatvato natma.
Syaranandamayopyayam.
Syaranandamayopyayam.
Bimbabhuto yahananda.
Bimbabhuto yahananda.
Atma sau sarvadas hite.
Atma sau sarvadas hite.
In the second line, anandamayaha api ayam. I am this. This anandamaya, this anandamaya kosha. What about this anandamaya kosha? Na atma syat. That's what we're after in these verses, right? We're not trying to, you know, what is the point of defining these five koshas? Who cares? The point is to negate the identification we have with each of these five koshas. In this case, to negate the sense of being, well, to negate the sense of being an enjoyer. Take just a moment to set this up. To negate the sense of I-ness and my-ness. Not a small thing, right? To negate the sense of being a willful agent of action. Not a small thing. And to negate the sense of being an experiencer of what's happening in your mind. These are huge steps in the teachings of Vedanta. And in order to appreciate it at all, we have to return to what we said at the outset of this class, and that is the consciousness which you are is the unchanging observer of what's happening in your mind. If you are the unchanging observer, then I-ness and my-ness belong to the manas and not to you. If you are the unchanging observer, then the status of agency belongs to your buddhi and not to you. When you made a decision to come to class, were you aware of that decision or not? You're aware of the decision. You are the conscious being by whom the decision which took place in your buddhi was known. The decision took place in your buddhi. You knew that decision. You are the conscious, unchanging consciousness by which that is known. Now, this is what the we'll suggest the first half of this verse for tonight. And that is, deep sleep is a transient state of existence. It has kadachitkatva. What a word. Kadachitkatva. Deep sleep has the condition of being occasional. Kadachit means sometimes. Kadachitka means occasional. Kadachitkatva, the status of being occasional. Kadachitkatvataha, because of that. Because deep sleep comes and goes, na-atma. Here's the point. To be the enjoyer of deep sleep is an experience that takes place only for those few hours or minutes of deep sleep. Then it goes. that sense of being the bhokta, the sense of being identified as the enjoyer, comes and goes. Unfortunately, the only example that we can give, and I don't believe there's any other, the example of samadhi. Can we explain this? What we're trying to see is he wants to negate the anandamaya kosha, which means to negate your identification as being an experiencer. And please note how fundamental being an experiencer is to how we see ourselves. It's absolutely fundamental. How can that possibly be negated? So here he says, because the condition of deep sleep comes and goes, this is his hetu, this is his reasoning. And I think we need to go one step further. He doesn't give the example, but I'll give the example. It's given in other places. I think a more powerful example is that of samadhi. And let me explain how. When you're meditating, you progressively become free of all these identifications we discussed before. You can progressively become free of I-ness in the body and my-ness to your possessions because your attention is withdrawn from all of that. As you meditate further, at some point, the sense of being a karta, an agent of action, goes away. Excuse me, which is to say, at one point in meditation, you feel like, here I am meditating. And at another point in meditation, you won't feel like, I am meditating. Meditation is, but I am not meditating. Can you imagine? You may have had this experience. If not, you can imagine the experience. At one point, I am having a great meditation. I am meditating. I am the meditator. And at another point, when you're more deeply absorbed, meditation is. But I'm no longer the meditator. The meditator disappears, meditation continues. Now, in that condition, you are now experiencing the meditation. You follow? Do you see the steps? So first step is I-ness and my-ness goes away. That's obvious, because you're just withdrawn. The next step is kartritva, the sense of being the meditator, goes away. Meditation continues, but the meditator undergoes dissolution. This is the next stage of meditation, when the vijnanamaya kosha gets resolved. These are samadhis. The final stage, prior to the final stage, you are experiencing the object of meditation. Suppose you're meditating on a mantra, Om Namah Shivaya, Om Namah Shivaya. The prior stage is, I'm meditating on Om Namah Shivaya, Om Namah Shivaya. In a later stage, Om Namah Shivaya alone continues, and I'm no longer the meditator. Meditator is gone, the only thing that's present is Om Namah Shivaya, Om Namah Shivaya. And I am the conscious person observing, passively observing, the repetition of Om Namah Shivaya in my mind. Suppose. Suppose you may or may not have had this kind of experience in meditation where you have the sense of coming closer and closer and closer to the object of meditation. Either you're coming closer to the object of meditation or the object of meditation is coming closer to you. It all depends on how you envision it. In the case of a mantra, suppose that mantra just grows larger and larger and larger. And I'm just trying to find some language to suggest what this meditative experience might be like. everyone's experiences are different, so I'm just using some suggestive language. Suppose you no longer feel yourself as the meditator, but the meditation continues. What continues? Om Namah Shivaya, Om Namah Shivaya. And Om Namah Shivaya just grows and grows until it envelops you, so to speak. Another way of saying that is the distance between you and the mantra shrinks to zero. Many times you've heard it said, you merge with the object of meditation. At that time, when you merge with the object of meditation, when there's no distance between you and the object of meditation, there's no longer an experiencer and experienced. Got it? Prior to this merging, Om Namah Shivaya goes on in your mind, and you are the conscious observer of Om Namah Shivaya as it goes on in your mind. You are the bhokta, and you are identified as being the bhokta. But suppose the meditation progresses in that way, where you find the mantra engulfing you, is one way of understanding it. You find the distance between you and the mantra disappearing, is another way of understanding it. Or a third way of understanding it, you find yourself merging with that mantra, or whatever is the object of meditation. And to make that point one last time, when you merge with the object of meditation, there the distinction between object and observer, the difference between experiencer and experienced, ceases. Bhokta means experiencer. The experiencer goes away in that condition of samadhi. What remains is just meditation without the bhokta. This is just to illustrate. You can get the sense of the karta undergoing dissolution, the sense of being the doer of meditation. So if you can imagine that being the doer of meditation can go away in meditation, suppose you go a little bit deeper so that the experiencer of meditation also goes away. Possible for the doer of meditation to go away in deep contemplation. It's also possible for the experiencer, the bhokta of meditation, to go away. This is another illustration to show the kada-chitka-tva, the status of being occasional. It comes and goes. If that bhokta comes and goes, how can it be you? And this is the point of the first part of the verse. When we meet next time, so we've done all the negation. What's left? We'll see that in the second part of the verse. Om Sarve Bhavantu Sukhinah, Sarve Santu Niravaya, Sarve Bhadrani Pashyantu, Ma kaschit dukkha bhavet, asato ma satkamaya, tamaso ma jyotirgamaya, mrityor ma amritangamaya. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Before you go, of two quick announcements. One is to remind you, with the bad weather starting to come now, make sure you are signed up on our program email list on our homepage. That's how we will let you know when we cancel a class due to bad weather or illness or anything. We'll send out an email. Make sure you sign up on that list. It's on our homepage. Second thing is, I have a request. I'm considering a project and I need some help on the project. What I need is high quality video of the episodes of the Bhagavad Gita. Now, many of you have this, the old B.R. Chopra, If you have a DVD set of really good quality D.R. Chopra Mahabharata, could I borrow it for several days? If it's high enough quality, maybe I can import it into my computer and use it. Or I think Bhagavad Gita has also been done independently of the Mahabharata in some Hindi serial. So if you have a DVD of the episodes of the Bhagavad Gita, could I borrow that for several days? Drop it off as soon as you can. Please put your name and phone number on so I can make sure that it comes back to you. That'll be a great help. Thank you. See you soon.